Hello, how are you? It's Siobhan here. I hope you're having a good December so far and you're preparing for Christmas as much as you can. And you're doing really well. I have to say thank you so much, just quickly, for you always listening to this podcast. This is episode number 8 and it's exciting because we've just had the Spotify wrap. We have been listened to in 69 other countries. So bonjour, hola, guten tag, hola. I've said that already. Thank you so much for listening. This was the 125th most popular sports podcast in the UK. This one is a very different conversation. I've got Jenny Beattie, Scotland international and Arsenal defender. Now, I have known Jenny since I think we were about 13 or 14, maybe younger. Her and Roosh, my sister, were really good pals. They were in the Scotland schools teams together. Bumped into her in town one day in St Albans. She's back playing at Arsenal. And I was with the kids and I just saw her straight away. Her height, she just stands out a mile and she's just the nicest person. So we've had a really good catch up. But Jenny will tell you in great detail that she has been through something really, really hard. Her hardest challenge in her whole life. In the last few weeks, and she really opens up in this conversation. She has a very powerful story to tell and an important message to send as well. She really does give you an insight to everything she's been through of late. So thank you to Jenny for speaking to me. Thank you for this amazing conversation, and I hope you enjoy hearing Jenny's story.
So we were just talking before we came through here, and I remember there was a time, probably about 16, 17 years ago, where you probably looked 25 and you were about 12. And we used to go to this club called Silver.
Yeah.
I'd said to Roosh, and Roosh was like, I don't think Jenny came to Silver. I was like, no, I swear she was there. She was fond of a wee Blue Wicked and a good old rave.
I know, we go way back, actually.
It feels like so long ago.
Good times, I know.
But that just wouldn't happen anymore. I'd like for a little old school reunion of something like that.
I know, I always count myself lucky that I was part of the generation that kind of still got to have a little bit of that sort of uni lifestyle, sort of being young. And nowadays the kids coming up are professional age 16, 17, and as much as that's amazing to see how much the game's gone on and stuff, I'm always a little bit grateful that I got to have a little bit of fun when I was younger.
Of course, because I mean that's all life, and I feel that if you avoid that, there's a time these young players might rebel, you know, and they might not know how to completely cope with being hammered in a club, if we ever get back to a club ever again in this life. Oh. But yeah, it's good to talk to you. So you're back at Arsenal. Let's start there. You were there, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah. When I was 18, I got offered the chance to, like, Arsenal was still semi-pro at that point, but they were offering uni education. So I kind of jumped at that because it was the best opportunity to do a sort of situation where I could continue studies and play for one of the best clubs in Europe at the time, I would say. I think they'd just won the European Cup, so yeah, jumped at it. Tony Gervais, my old under-19 coach, was the assistant down here, and so that was the familiarity I was looking forward to, and here I am back, so yeah. It's good to be back though.
What was it like when you got that call and, you know, it was in the pipeline that you were coming back, you know, to Arsenal? You'd been at Man City, things were going well there. But what was it like? Is that like, oh my God, really one of the best clubs in the WSL want you back? Man City, you're obviously flying as well, but what did that feel like?
Leaving Man City was not an easy decision whatsoever. Like, what they have up there, like the club, and you're fully ingrained within the club, and that's something that's quite a rare occurrence in women's football these days. But no, it was, I think what people don't realise is a lot of my friends from school live and work in the city in London, and a lot of my cousins live down here as well. And obviously I've worked with Joe Montemurro as well out in Melbourne. So the opportunity to come back here just fit every sort of aspect of football and personal life. So I jumped at it. And I jumped at that opportunity to be that sort of more experienced player coming in at Arsenal with, you know, now we've got the likes of Lota Wubemoy coming up, who's, you know, 2021, getting senior call-ups for England and is an unbelievable talent. And I'm fully aware that she'll be incredible for Arsenal, and is, and her talent coming through now is amazing. But yeah, I think clubs always have to have a balance of experience and youth, and I find it fascinating watching the players come through, the talent, like, from being professional from the age of 16, 17 now, the girls are incredible coming through.
You mentioned then, you know, they don't do certain things that you would have done at 16, 17 years old, you know, maybe drinking or going out or whatever like that. How intense are they? Do you think it could be relaxed slightly?
It's tough. I'll always believe that, even though I think it's amazing that they're professional, I still do believe that you could might maybe be doing something on the side, you know, trying to keep your brain ticking over and just sort of have that switch off.
Yeah.
As much as I think professional women's football is amazing, I think when you're that young, and especially in the world of social media these days, it can become so just consuming, I think is the right word, and you have to have that switch off. So I see them coming through and they're so focused and they're unbelievably professional at such a young age, but I just wish they would have that level of perspective of, okay, it's amazing, yeah, but you know, you need to switch off, you need to relax, and you need to have your downtime. And I'll always be grateful that I had another set of friends of uni, of that switch off when I was younger, and can kind of understand that. But yeah, I wish I was professional at age 17.
Do you think there's a lack of character in some of these young players coming through because they are so strict, or is it purely what they do in the pitch that matters?
No, I think if anything, they probably have more character, if that makes sense, because they're so focused and they're so, you know, football is their number one, and they want to achieve this instant gratification of success in football that doesn't necessarily exist straight away. You kind of have to, I don't think they understand that things take a little bit of time and graft to work towards that. But no, they're full of character. They crack me up, all the young ones. I'm constantly learning from them, and yeah, they're a good crack.
And they come into your training sessions as well at certain times. And are there any of the ones that are a bit like, oh my God, there's Kim Little. Oh my God,
oh yeah,
there's Vivian Amidema. There's JB. You know, it must be really cool for them.
Like, yeah, no, I'll always, my favourite thing to do with the, like, kids is that, you know, if Westlife comes on in the changing room, I'm like, do you know this song? Like, and they're like, they look at me with the most blank face. Honestly.
Sacrilege!
Like, Flying Without Wings will come on and they don't know it. And I'm just like, that always gives me the sense of, yeah, I'm old. Like, I love it. It's so funny.
And it's just ridiculous because, like, you're born in, like, 91. I know. It's like, how did that become old?
When I was, like, that age, like 18, 19, I remember like Jane Ludlow asking me like for certain songs, and I'd be like, Jane, I have no idea what you're talking about. And it makes me laugh that I'm now that age group, that I'm just that old and boring one that like is not cool anymore.
You're not that.
I am.
And what about, would you like to go into coaching one day, and you know, is that something you would like to do?
I mean, I'd love to stay in sport. Like, I've loved the opportunities that sport have given me over the past few years, but I'm not sure coaching would maybe be for me. Like, I'll always, like, my brother, I had loads of conversations about my brother with this kind of stuff, and he always said to me, like, we've been so lucky to come in at 9, train, and leave by sort of 1, 2, 3 or 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches are in at 7, prepping sessions, delivering sessions, all the analysis, all the stuff, all the work behind the scenes that you don't see, and it's actually a lot more at a desk work than I think people don't realise, and yeah, that's not for me.
Fair enough. I want to talk to you actually about your family, because you're from, I mean, you should have been a rugby player really on paper when you look at your dad and your brother, John and Johnny Beattie, and what they did for Scotland on the rugby level. Did rugby ever tickle your fancy?
I have really fond memories of watching Johnny play like mini rugby and stuff. And I'd, like, obviously remember picking up a rugby ball and chucking it to him and playing and stuff, but I think my dad always thought it was maybe just a little bit too rough, so I never really got involved. But every other sport, loved it.
And you are the perfect, I mean, you came in tonight and I'm like, are you getting taller? Like, do you not stop? I mean, in real life, Jenny is a giant. You're the BFG, and I mean that in the nicest way.
Yeah,
you are. And then you've got loads of hair as well, so when you wear your bun
maybe adds on a bit.
That adds on about a good foot.
Yeah.
It's not often you would come up against, you know, women your size, is that right?
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. My brother and my dad are both 6'4", and my mum's quite tall as well. So yeah, I maybe fit in a bit better in amongst my family.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, rugby was never really, I don't know why. I don't remember ever thinking, oh, I'd love to play rugby. But hockey, golf, all that, tennis, loved it. I remember being down the tennis club every summer's night with like all of my friends. But yeah, it was an amazing environment to grow up in.
So how did you fall in love with football? When did that happen?
So my best friend, Sophie McIntyre, who's still one of my best mates now, bridesmaids at our wedding, whenever that may be.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
We joined the primary football team, I think primary 4, and we were the only girls in the team. And that is 100% when I fell in love with football. And I always look back on that and think, I was so chuffed that I was doing it with one of my mates. Like, that made it so much easier to be in a sort of boys' environment because I was with one of my best friends who was doing the exact same thing. And she went on to play hockey for Scotland and did really well at that. But I kind of continued to play football. But I'm always really grateful that that was a nice wee moment that I got to share with another female who was making me feel just as comfortable as I would be in amongst a boys' team.
It was very unusual, I'll say it, I can't believe I'm about to say it, in our day, to have a girl footballer kind of thing in the school and in the class and whatever like that. And obviously, my sister was the girl footballer in our school.
Yeah.
And when you got together with your first club and your first group of girls, do you look back now and think, and now look at us? Kind of thing. Now look at how women's football has grown.
Oh yeah, massively. Like, because when you say your first girls team, but it was a women's team, you know, when you're sort of 14, I think was the age when you couldn't play with like boys teams anymore, you had to move into women's team. And like the youth squads didn't really, you had Scotland squads, but you had to go straight into women's teams if you wanted to play at like a decent level. So I went in from 14-15 into like senior women's football, so that was a huge, massive difference. Like, imagine going from boys your own age into women's teams who are training, you know, in the evenings, and you're coming back at 11 o'clock trying to get up for school the next day. Like, it was a weird transition. But nowadays, when you see sort of girls' academies, you just think that's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, I remember training at City or now at Arsenal and seeing like all girls' academies and just think that is the coolest thing. Like, as much as I loved playing with the boys and stuff, and it was a like it was class for my development and stuff. Yeah. Now to see girls' academies exist, I just look at that and think, every time I see it, I just think that's so cool.
Yeah, like, it is. And I don't know if it's since I had kids, I've gone like full feminist.
Yeah.
And I always was for the women, but and especially for women's footballers, because I see the challenges. I even see now, you know, it's still not fully fair.
Yeah.
But it's still amazing opportunities, and just 100%. these young girls, young women coming through. You can look and go, even 10 years from now, the platforms, the levels, the investments that are coming, it is great. And I'm so pleased to see it, kind of thing. I think when it's been around you all your life, and now you're starting to see it really come on, it's incredible. Unlucky for Scotland. You guys out of the Euros, which was a shame because you were almost so close. And like you say, just before we started the interview, such a strong squad.
You know, I feel like I've gone through every emotion over the past, like, camp, knowing that I do genuinely believe it's probably the most talented squad we've had, but yet the most disappointing one on paper, the most, like, as in disappointing campaign, I mean. And some aspects I feel like it's because we're always the underdog, so it's always easier to fight when you're behind, but we haven't really known what it's like to qualify for two tournaments on the bounce and then go through sort of disappointment like that. We maybe didn't know how to deal with it mentally, but at the end of the day, we just didn't perform over not just one game, a full campaign. So hopefully we can sort of regroup mentally and emotionally and actually bounce back from it, because we still, ironically, we still got two games left in the campaign to go, so we still have to finish it and just, I guess, do ourselves justice, and then I guess look towards the next World Cup.
What's that feeling like? How do you all walk away from that together? What's the dressing room like? What's the bus home like? What's the travel like?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of all sat in the... Like, the strangest thing is with COVID, you can't really, like, be there for each other, especially after the game. Like, you all have your own rooms. There's no sort of that interaction. So that probably added to the sadness to it. We obviously travelled back as the London girls back to... So we got to share the flight and whatnot the next day, and there was that... I think it was just massive disbelief. But then there's such a quick... The thing about international football, there's such a quick transition then to club.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's straight back to club. Everyone's straight back to the league game. So that focus just automatically switches. And then, yeah, obviously coming back to club and hearing everyone else's stories and Katie not qualifying for Ireland. And it is sad. Like, you want everyone to have the best experience and have the best, most successful career. Like, everyone... It's a really nice environment at Arsenal, because I feel like there's a really... there's a good amount of diverse countries, if that makes sense. Like, when I was at City, there was 8 or 10 lionesses. So it was very much so a lot about England, whereas at Arsenal, you've got Holland, you've got Ireland, you've got Germany, Austria, all these, you know, amazing countries that are all trying to do and have their best successes. So that's the, that I feel like that's great when we come back and chat about it. And then obviously it is, good. It's worth sharing the disappointment. But when you come back and have more successful stories, it's easier to talk about.
So talk to me about your achievements. You have been really all over the world playing football. Mm-hmm. What would be your career highlights so far?
I think it would be between two. Going out to Melbourne was probably one of the most enjoyable experiences on and off the pitch. We won the double out there, so the sort of plate and the cup as well. And that was just, you know, if anyone's ever been to Australia, they know how amazing it is as a country, and it was so much fun. And again, worked with Joe Montemurro for the first time. It was just so much fun off the pitch, and to get that trophy at the end of it was just class. And then winning the league back with City as well, that was another huge sort of milestone. I think winning the league is just the best, because that's when you know it's the most, it's been the most consistent season. Also actually scoring at the World Cup, like, I know it was the most tragic game, like Argentina will go down in like horrendous memories for so many people, but don't know if anyone, many people know this, but my dad actually scored a try on that same pitch.
No way.
And he only scored like 3 tries his whole career for Scotland, but he scored against France.
On that?
Parc des Princes, yeah.
Wow. And then you scored in that game?
Yeah. Like, and so he hardly scored any tries. I scored hardly any goals, but we managed to do it on the same, like, that for me was like, and to do it at a World Cup, that, okay, that's my answer.
Well, that scoring, and it's quite, yeah, it's quite emotional, and then it's nice because it resonates, yeah, with the family history as well.
Yeah.
Like, what did your dad say about that?
He's a man of not very many emotional words, but...
Well done, though.
Yeah. Well done, mate. He managed to find the picture of him scoring on the try, and there was, yeah, it was just one of those moments that you just try and pinch yourself. Like, yeah. Did that actually happen? But, because I didn't know going into the game he'd scored there, but I found out after, and I was like, okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I feel this leads on to something that's been going on in your life that, you know, you're now just starting to open up about. Mm-hmm. We watched you score a goal. I want to say that was 5 weeks ago now for Arsenal.
Yep.
You scored a goal and we watched you get quite emotional. Mm-hmm. And I watched that game and I was like, oh gosh, that meant so much to her. But something was going on in your life at that point that obviously made you feel really overwhelmed. What actually went on? Talk to us about what you went through.
Yeah, so one of, I guess, the biggest challenges or that I've ever come up against in my life personally or physically or anything was basically that game was on the Sunday, and I think it was the Thursday night that I got diagnosed with breast cancer after sort of finding a lump a few weeks previously or a month previously before that. So that's what, 5-6 weeks ago now, and it's kind of been, yeah, a huge roller coaster of emotions, and but I'm glad to kind of be on hopefully the other side of it, and I've just got a small aspect of radiotherapy to go through after having surgery a few weeks ago as well. So it's been crazy, and it's been something that I don't think I ever expected to go through, especially not at 29 years old, but these things, sometimes life just throws at you and you just have to power through and deal with it. And but I can't emphasise enough how amazing the support's been, like my teammates, everything. Like, I don't know what I would have done without them. Like, they knew straight away on that Saturday, and I think that goal sort of epitomises how amazing they've been. And it wasn't just a goal, it wasn't just a game for us, it was kind of a team coming together and showing the support for each other.
It really was. Watching that game when that happened, what the news that had come from you, it felt like you guys played as a unit and a family kind of thing. Now you're obviously wanting to raise awareness for breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Are you able to tell us what happened when you found that lump and what the process was after that?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm quite a conscious person anyway. I've always kind of checked my breast when I was in the shower or anything. Just so when I found it, I kind of knew that it didn't feel quite right. So mm-hmm. I spoke to my club doctor initially, and she felt it as well, and she was just a no-risk kind of person, like, referred me straight away to the breast clinic in London. So I went to the first appointment, and they did the ultrasound everywhere, and they were quite content with it being a cluster of cysts, which can be quite common. But they wanted me to come back a month later just to make sure and to see, because hormones can change those kind of things within like a cycle, which is totally normal as well. But when I went back a month later, and bear in mind that in my head at this point, I'm thinking I'm absolutely fine. Like, I'm not worried.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't for 1 minute think that it was going to be anything.
That was my next sinister. Question. That
honestly wasn't worried. It wasn't until they did a biopsy when I went back that caught me completely off guard. I remember like crying my eyes out on the phone to my mum driving home, because I was just like, Mum, they've just done a biopsy. Like, why? Why did they do that? And even then, people were trying to reassure me to say, like, still could be nothing, like, you'll be fine. And I was still training and playing at this point, and I think that was the Monday night, got the biopsy. Played Chelsea on the Wednesday, got diagnosed on a Thursday. So it completely, and bear in mind, during COVID, you're going to appointments by yourself, and no one can come in with you. So I just remember being in the room and thinking, you know, this guy just said, unfortunately, it's a cancerous tumour. And I was sat there thinking, hands on my head, like, the rest of the conversation was a complete blur. But
and what do you think, sorry, I'm not getting emotional, but what is it, what do you think when that news is delivered to you?
You think the worst. I'm not gonna try and be brave and say, oh yeah, I thought I was going to be fine at that point. Like, I thought the worst, yeah. Like, I asked him, am I going to die? Like, I feel like that would be the most common question to, I'm sorry, you're making you upset.
No, you're not. No, I really want to talk to you about this. I think it's great that you're talking so openly about it as well. So
yeah.
Please don't make me.
So I feel like that would be the most... I feel like that would be the most common question, though, when you get sat with that news. But the two words that they said in that thing was small and treatable. Okay. And those were the two words that I held on to for the whole process. Mm. I just kept small and treatable, small and treatable. But the thing about cancer that I don't think a lot of people really, because again, I had no history in my family. I didn't have anything. So I had, it was a complete learning process for me. And I don't think I really understood the step-by-step process that actually cancer entails when you go through it. So after diagnosis, I had to go back the next day for basically like a bunch of other tests, so like blood tests, MRI on both breasts with dye in there so you can have a full picture of everything, x-ray on your lungs, ultrasound on your abdominals just to make sure there's nothing else going on. And you don't get results basically until Monday when I got the treatment plan to say, yep, surgery is the next point. And then there was another 10 days until you get surgery. So you've got diagnosis, treatment plan, surgery. And then even from surgery, like, I know this is the thing, what people don't, it's such a stage, but and it takes, like, it's so long-winded, like, that you have, like, that's when I found it really hard to, I was a yo-yo. I was up and down like a yo-yo.
Oh, yeah.
One day I'd be absolutely fine, the next day I'd be crying that my eyes out on the phone to my sister, just being like, I feel this, I feel that. You become such a hypochondriac to your body, like, with things you feel. Like, I was getting stomach cramps because I was so stressed, and I was like, is there something in my stomach? Like, but it's just stress, just embedded, like, in your body. It's horrible.
What was the first phone call you made was to your mum when you left that appointment?
Yeah.
What was her reaction like? Like, what did you, how did you break that news to her?
That's just a conversation that you never expect to have with your parents, like, to, and also to tell them over the phone was one of the hardest things I've ever done, and I'm sure it was even harder for them, like, to hear that. Again, thankfully my little mate Kim came to the appointment with me when I got diagnosed, so she was outside in the car park, like, waiting for me. And I remember coming outside and she was just pacing around the car park, like, not knowing to do. But, phoning my mum and my dad and my sister and But even though that was so hard, I remember a phone call with my brother the next morning, and he was just so positive.
Yeah.
That it completely, I was like, he was just like, Jenny, you can do this. Like, you've got it early. You've caught it early. Like, what they're saying, you need to listen to what the specialists are saying. Like, they're saying it's small. They're saying it's treatable. You can, like, fucking do this. Like,
yeah.
And that, for me, again, like, the support that my family gave me, even from a distance, was next level. In amongst, like, all the teammates and stuff. Like, it makes me so emotional when I think about it, because I don't know what I would have done, like, without them, like, having to go through that.
And what was it like when you got that phone call after Tess, the operation to remove what was going on there? What was that phone call like and that meeting like when they said, you know, things are positive?
Yeah.
And you're cancer-free? Was that the words, you're cancer-free?
I think that was the words that I might have shouted, like, a million times since
good.
That night. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, when they take out a tumour and they take out lymph nodes, because lymph nodes is what spreads cancer around the body. So if lymph nodes are free, that's like best possible outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And mine were cancer free. Like, there were no bad cells in the lymph nodes. So that for me was the best news possible. And
yeah.
I think that was another sort of turning point for me mentally, knowing that that was the biggest relief I could have had. Like, that was huge. That kind of meant potentially no chemo, and that was basically what happened. I just have to do radiotherapy and take a drug called tamoxifen,
right?
And
you're feeling that you played, you know, at last week's match, and you know you're back now playing at Arsenal. Mm. You had it really felt like, Jenny, it was 6 weeks ago.
I know.
You know, it's no time at all. So good for you. Like, and it is positivity and you know, a mentality thing that does it can really pull you through that. Now you want to help raise awareness, and what's your journey on that? What would you like to do?
That's an interesting one. I'm not sure. I think for the minute, it's just getting my story out there.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, when they get diagnosed with these things or hear, a lot of the time your head goes to stories that aren't necessarily positive, you know, leading to the unthinkable. Whereas I think for me, why I wanted to talk about it was because if things are found early, it can be okay.
Mm.
And as much as it's still a horrible process to go through, you know, you still need to think, doctors are incredible at what they do. And the treatment nowadays has come on so much in the past 10, 15, 20 years that, like, I feel so incredibly grateful, because they were amazing. You know, like, even emotionally, they were... I text my breast nurse at, like, 10:30 a night before a game one day, just because I was like stressing about something, and she replied at 10:30 on a Saturday night, and then I fell asleep and played the next day, and I'm just like, that's incredible. Like, so
you.
To share those little experiences, and also I have friends who work within the NHS, and they're saying that so many cancers are going undiagnosed right now because people aren't coming in to get checked. Like, I know it's been a really hard year for so many people.
Yeah.
And COVID is a really scary thing, but please go and get checked. That, I feel like that's number one thing, because don't fester on symptoms that you have, or it could be absolutely nothing. But if there's that small percentage that it is something, go and get it checked and go and get it sorted early. That's my number one thing that I want to sort of share with everyone.
Good, good. And it's the right message. And yeah, I mean, you got it early. And
yeah.
When I heard the news from Katie, because we planned to do this podcast, obviously a wee while ago, I just can't believe it, that someone, you know, who pals go back, you know, you just cannot believe that when you hear that news about someone, you know, your age, you know, so young, so, you know, so I think you're spreading all the right messages, and I think there was a time as well where your partner was in isolation, and you know, you can't see your family, all this happened over the phone. It couldn't have happened at a worse time, you know, with everything going on this year. Is there something else up there, like mentally positive thought you're telling yourself that can help other people through mentally challenging and physically challenging times? What would that advice to somebody be?
That's a good question. I think for me, it was always just lean on the support that you have. Like, offload any sort of worries and emotions you have. For me, that was huge. Like, I feel like people who know me know I'm quite an emotional person, and I'll happily admit I needed all the support. Like, the coaching staff at Arsenal were incredible. If it meant going for walks because of COVID, we couldn't do anything. You know, the girls were unbelievable. Like, just chatting away, and also normalizing those horrible words, like normalizing cancer and tumor and chemo, and saying those things out loud early on really helped me sort of process it. I mean, I know it's all happened so quick, and that was really hard to process, but talk. I think that's number one for me. Talk about things. Make sure you're not, you know, holding everything in. And now I just think people are amazing, and sharing experiences is what we need to do, good or bad or indifferent.
Yeah, I like that you speak about emotions as well, because I think as a football player, I think everyone looks at female footballers, male footballers, and just think, well, you're superheroes. You know, you live the best life, you have the best job. You know, some people think like that, but you are, you're humans, mm-hmm. and things happen, bad things happen, and it's how sometimes the mental toughness is such an important thing that should be taught as well. And I remember actually, it would have been about a few months ago, Katie came in from training one day, and she said that she'd been speaking to you, and you'd got upset because you had a bad back, that you'd been having really bad back problems and stuff like that, mm-hmm. which I didn't know was something really that you dealt with. And she went, and she said, you know, I could just tell you seemed a bit off that day, and you were quiet, and then you got upset, and you know, about your back, and how you're worried about the problems that've been given you. And I was like, well, that's great that you recognised that she wasn't herself that day. And I think that's so good that you let those emotions out.
I remember that day so well as well. We were walking out to the pitches, and I don't know, back pain. You just have bad days, don't you? It's totally human. And I'm the kind of person that as soon as anyone gives me a hug or asks me if I'm okay, I'm gone. I'm like, no. Katie was quality, obviously. Noticed it firsthand, and I think it's so important just to share how you're feeling. And
like you say, you've got a good relationship with your team players. You're very good pals with Kim. Mm-hmm. And you two have been pals for, like, it feels like 100 years, I suppose, you know, from Scotland schools all the way through. What is next for Arsenal? Because we're seeing United sitting at the top of the league at the moment.
On one hand, it's like, it's amazing that it's such a competitive league. Like, it genuinely is. Like, you couldn't guess who's going to win it at this point. Obviously, I hope it's going to be Arsenal. And yeah, it's obviously class being back in the same team as Kim and stuff, and sharing, you know, especially with what's been going on the past couple of months. But you know, it's a team full of so much talent, and unfortunately we've had quite a few injuries this year again, but it seems like we're back to full fitness again, almost everyone anyway. But God, they're such an enjoyable bunch to play with every day, genuinely. Such a good laugh, and the quality is unbelievable. Like, to train with the likes of Viv Miedema every day, she's just a little bit of a freak.
Yeah. That's not right. No one can be that good.
Not at her age anyway. But no, I mean, ask any footballer why they're in the game, and it's to win trophies, so fingers crossed.
Good. Yeah. And on a personal life note as well, you've been with your partner for quite some time, mm-hmm. Chloe. She plays at Aston Villa.
Yep.
Another fellow Scot. What's your aspirations for the future? Is it here down south? Would you like to go back home at some point? Would you like a family? Would you like to get married?
Yeah, no, I think we'd love all of that. I think it's so hard to plan things when you're both still in football, and it's such a fickle game, you know, it can change so quickly, and it's hard to plan too far in advance in terms of that. But I mean, I'm pretty sure I'll retire first. She's got a few years on me. But no, I think on a personal note as well, with everything that's been going on, it's crazy. Like, you automatically switch to thinking, you know, I'd love marriage, I'd love kids, and I maybe would like it a little bit sooner because of everything that's happened recently. I think your perspective on life changes a little bit on what really matters. And I never thought I'd want to move home so soon, but now I think the big things that matter to me are friends and family and those kind of connections. So, you know, I've still got a few things I want to achieve in football, and so does Chloe, of course, as well. But yeah, I think we'd love to move home, and
family first.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
good. Actually, and I remembered when we were texting after I'd heard what was going on, and I was looking at the picture on your WhatsApp icon of your family all dressed up. I was just bawling my eyes out. I was like, I had to slap myself. I was like, what am I doing? Jenny could see me now, should hook me.
Well, that's the thing though. Like my brother lives in France. He's obviously played rugby for, he's been retired a year now. And Julie lives in Edinburgh. But it's so hard to find time to all be as a family. And, you know, that picture was at my brother's wedding in 2013, maybe. And I could still count on one hand that we've maybe all been as a five since that wedding, which is, you know, that's sad. And it has been such a strange year that all we want is to spend time with each other. And Johnny's just, had another baby. So
he's still with a wife?
Yeah, he's still.
Not single anytime soon. Big fit.
Sorry,
Johnny.
No. So they need to get baby Finn a passport, and with Brexit and all that stuff it's taking ages, so they can't come back for Christmas, which again is such a shame, but we'll be a five soon again, hopefully. Like they're a top bunch, so
good. It's good to hear you speaking positively about family and looking forward to seeing your mom and dad and brother and sister. I think it's great.
As soon as Nicola Sturge lets me back in the country, I'm there.
Nikki, you hear this, doll? Any chance let our gal
just
Jenny
extend
in
the bubble.
Well, it's been so good to talk to you. I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad you're completely on the mend, and great to catch up.
Thanks so much for having me. Loved it. Thanks, Siobhan.
So that was Scottish international and Arsenal defender Jenny Beattie. Very emotional. I didn't expect to get that upset. Katie actually had to tell me the news, and just could not stop crying. It just really got to me. Glad to hear she's doing well. You could hear herself that she's doing great, and I think it just goes to show you never know what people are going through. I mean, she's been on that pitch representing, and it meant the world that her team were there for her. A really good togetherness and team spirit going on at Arsenal Women just now, and that is amazing to see. And good luck to Jenny, and like she says, spread the message, check yourself, you know, don't sit and worry about things, be cautious, look after yourself. Thank you so much to Jenny for sharing her story and being so open. Have a good December and a nice Christmas, and I will catch up with you next year. Bye bye.